Google may be taking a hard look at part of its business model after losing a European antitrust court battle. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. A high-stakes decision from the European Union's second-highest court all centered on one question. Did Google unfairly favor its own shopping comparison in search results? Yes, according to a ruling just this hour, which upholds a $2.8 billion fine imposed in 2017 by the EU's digital and competition chief, Marguerite Vestager. It was the second biggest antitrust fine the EU has ever handed down. Professor Friso Bostoen, who studies competition regulation, explains what today's ruling means for the way Google does business.
I'm sure Google will want to appeal the judgment in practice, you know, apart from it still having to pay this fine. It will need to keep up the changes it has implemented in its search engine. It went from a model where it only showed its own comparison shopping results to showing also the results of those competitors that were first demoted. So, of course, now it's in this auction format where really there are more customers of Google than competitors.
So could this decision today open the floodgates for other unfair competition cases against not just Google, but other big tech companies across the world?
This was a bit of a test case for other cases that the commission might want to start against Google for similar conduct. It also competes with flight booking services, holiday rental services, well, it's local review sites. And if it wants to start those cases now, of course, this precedent definitely strengthens its hand.
Now, separately today, a $4 billion mass legal action against Google over claims it secretly tracked millions of iPhone users. Internet activity here in the UK has been blocked by the Supreme Court. So we had a win and a loss for Google. How will it likely be looking at both of these in tandem today?
Google is fighting a lot of legal fights, some of which have to do with competition, others that have more to do with privacy. It's not a completely different matter, but still, at least in terms of enforcement, there's different authorities looking at these different practices. They're not all too closely linked, but Google is fighting a multi-level fight. Well, it'd be interesting to see where all of those go.
Professor Friso Bostoen, thank you so much for breaking this down for us this morning.
Thank you.
Well, shares of Google parent company Alphabet are lower in pre-market trade ahead of the opening bell on Wall Street. Checking some other numbers, investor attention is still fixed on China's property sector as Evergrande today faces a deadline to pay interest on three bonds totaling $148 million. Meanwhile, shares in another Chinese property developer, Fantasia, dropped by nearly 50% in Hong Kong. They resume trading today after a more than one-month suspension, as the BBC's Mariko Oi reports.
While the world's most indebted developer, China's Evergrande, has managed to raise cash ahead of today's payment deadline, some of its rivals are facing similar issues. Shares in Fantasia were suspended for more than a month after failing to repay a bond that matured last month. Its surprise default shocked investors. As its shares returned to trade on Wednesday, their values nearly halved after the company said there's no guarantee it'll be able to meet its other financial obligations.
That's the BBC's Mariko Oi reporting there. Global aid agencies have warned this week of a worsening humanitarian crisis in Afghanistan. The country's now former finance minister told the BBC the government was brought down by a rampant corruption at a very high level. He claims top generals pocketed funding for most of the registered troops who, in practice, never actually existed. The BBC's Ed Butler has more on that story.
Khalid Payenda served as finance minister for just 6 fateful months at the start of this year. Not enough, he says, to tackle what he found to be endemic corruption amongst MPs, governors, customs officers and other ministers. In the final months, he says, frontline generals were claiming millions of dollars to pay soldiers who didn't exist, pocketing money for ammunition, whilst also taking back handers from their sworn enemies, the Taliban.
My assumption is we never had 300,000 forces. The way the accountability was done, you would ask the chief in that province, you know, how many people you have. And, you know, based on that, you would calculate salaries and ration expenses. And they would always be inflated. Even when you had soldiers, they were not paid on time. They would be also double dipping, you know, the same people would get paid by the government, but they would also go to Taliban or surrender and then make a deal with them and get paid again. I did not see the urgency in my colleagues and understanding the gravity of the issues. Or they understood it well, they did not care. You know, some people made money. I have, for example, my customs director coming to me and saying that this governor is really pushing me. You know, he's saying this government is not going to last 6 more months. Are you crazy putting all these custom revenues into the treasury? Why not we just do a 50-50 between us?
The former minister denies accepting any corrupt payments himself. He says he stood down when the president lost faith in him, but he regrets his role in a government which he reckons betrayed the faith of the people.
When I was at the Ministry of Finance, because of the stigma attached with customs, I never dealt with it. We had a golden opportunity, we all lost it. And unfortunately, who lost the most are the common Afghans. You know, they are worse than they were in pre-9/11 era.
He now calls on the international community to rescue Afghanistan from humanitarian disaster. It must not, though, he says, release the country's frozen assets to the Taliban.
That's the BBC's Ed Butler there. And in London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.